Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I hope you've had a great weekend, and wherever you are in the world listening to the show today, whether you're in the UK driving home at 5 p.m., I want to thank you for tuning in to the show and making us part of your drive time home. Hope that you are having safe travels. We don't want you to get in any kind of wrecks or anything like that, but we appreciate you tuning in today and hope you have had an enjoyable start to your week. But today we're going to do a show of poetry, and that sounds kind of crazy, except that we've done it before and people go nuts for it. I have a feeling they go nuts for it because of the guest, who is Mr. Mark DePina, but we call him Dip because where he comes from in Australia, he's known as Dip, and his family's all of the Dips, and everybody has a Dip name, and I'm sure Mark will tell us all about him. But Dip, welcome back to the show. Well, let's try this again. We're doing some technical stuff. Let's try this again. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Garrett. Can you hear me?
There we go. I can hear you now. I gave you this great build-up and introduction. Did you hear any of that, or are we starting from scratch?
I told
you it's live radio.
All.
Okay, well, there we go. Okay.
As I said to you, mate, I'm just a Cronulla hack. I'm not worthy of that sort of accolade, but I really appreciate that you're doing it for me.
Well, yeah. I think you're worthy of it, so there you go. So I appreciate you being here today.
Yeah.
So what's the weather like in your part of the world?
We're heading into our winter, and the last few days are starting to change. That up until a week ago, I was surfing in board shorts, and the weather was, we had this massive storm that came through, a really, what they call probably a 100-year storm.
Wow.
in the area. And in 74, in where I am in Cronulla, we had a massive storm that really virtually wiped out the eastern seaboard in that area, and a lot of damage. And this storm was similar in, but probably not as intensity, but it did a lot of damage to the coast. And as the low moved up the coast, there's a place about 200 k's north of Cronulla. It's in Newcastle area. They got the full brunt, and sadly there was a few lives lost with flash flooding. And I suppose it all pales into insignificance when you see the Nepal catastrophe, you know, and it just makes you, you know, brings back things into perspective when you see such devastation like that. And, you know, we lost a few lives and it's really sad, but to see so many thousands of lives across the world like that, it's just terrible.
Well, it's never good to have any type of loss. And unfortunately, it's just kind of like the circle of life type of thing. You hate to think about it, and you always want everybody to be as healthy and happy and as okay as possible. But I guess, you know, for the people who are there and surviving, you know, hopefully we get enough help over there to get everybody out that can be saved, and to start, you know, getting stuff cleared out.
Yeah, exactly. As usual, mate. I've written 3,000 odd poems, and when we talked about this during the week of what the theme was today, and I've done the sea bit and I've done the romance poems, and I just wanted to do a few inspirational sort of poems with a lot of topical subjects. Like Reece, just the other day we had our 100-year celebration of Anzac Day, and as I explained to you before we came on air,
that was off air. Yeah, tell everybody what Anzac Day is, because I hadn't heard of that before.
Yeah, well, 100 years ago in 1915, on the 25th of April, we Australian soldiers as allies to the England and whatever, basically were assigned to go to Gallipoli, which is in Turkey, and fight the troops against the enemy, or whatever they call it, the Turkey at the time, Turkish, and basically it was an area which was very, very hilly, and they fought a battle that is sort of in history has now been landmarked as a commemoration more than a celebration of but just the way they fought and against all odds. And so over the years, we've always commemorated this day. It's called, and there's a poem going around, and it's got like at the going down of the sun and in the morning we will remember them, and it ends with lest we forget. And it's becoming a real like a patriotic. A lot of the younger kids that have no idea of what their forefathers went through are getting behind it. And all around Australia on this day, and it's a combination of the New Zealand, it's called ANZAC because it's Australia and New Zealand Army Corps. And we all celebrate this day. And we have this dawn service. And this year at our local Cronulla Beach, it's got that big now, they've had to move it from the park where they have a commemorative monument down to the beach side. And in the morning before dawn, there'd be thousands of people have come down to commemorate and remember. And there's marches through the streets. But being 1915, there wouldn't be many of the older guys, soldiers left. But it's sort of a representation of all the wars that you send your troops. But whether it be the local Afghan down to Vietnam, it's sort of a representation of all wars in relation to. But the main whole theory or the whole theme was the ANZAC this Gallipoli War. They've actually made movies of it, and where all the soldiers lost their lives in Gallipoli, they've actually got a lot of the gravestone crosses in rows, and a lot of people from Australia go over, and it's a very moving occasion, and they actually make the trek to Turkey to the actual site where the battle took place. And they actually, it's very moving, and the people that go there, it's just incredible what they say about the feeling and the mood. It's just incredible, which leads me into the theme today. I wrote a couple of poems regarding Anzac Day, and so you can imagine this monument of the fallen soldier. And basically, as I said, most of them have died and passed on, but their memories live on through this commemorative day. And so I wrote a poem. I would have been, I'd say, 2 years ago, and I've written another one since. And it's called The Last Anzac. And basically, it's about the last surviving Anzac soldier with his medals marching with such pride to be still part of, you know, but being 1915 and 215, he'd have to be 118 years old these days, because look, the youngest Anzac that was sent there was actually 14 years of age, and that was only just brought to light. And it's amazing, the patriotism, and we're just, you know, allies to England, and we're thousands and thousands of miles away. But when you're an ally to the country and the cause, you know, I mean, I'm against all wars, as everyone is, you know, and it's a pity we can't sort of live in peace. But it was such a it was part of our freedom, and part of, in those days, you know, what it represented was the memories lived on and through this. So this one I'd call The Last Anzac, and I'll read it to you now. It's his weathered skin has a history, memory fading, but will never forget. His face, it always shows a mystery, temporarily evading, but won't neglect. His walk might be slower, but will always be proud, an Anzac that walks by your side. May we bow our heads lower, say it out loud, you're an Anzac who gives us such pride. He's a digger, he's a mate, he's a comrade, he's a soldier. Maybe it's bigger than any slate, but there's one memory that's never bolder. He's a Gallipoli survivor, a freedom fighter, a fellow Aussie. He's a man who's still alive, and in this march holds his posse. He marches proud and strong, and though his age may weary him, he knows where he should belong as he sings this battle hymn. He is an Anzac we should remember and bow our heads with pride. He was there, he had our back, He was there, right by my side. So when you rise at break of dawn and head down to the service, take a minute to remember those who have fallen and those who proudly serve us. Remember our last Anzac. Remember what he represents. And remember to have his back as our tribute starts to commence, lest we forget. So that was the feel that I got from the picture. As I said, to reiterate, I write from images. I see an image on Facebook, and the words just come to me. It's all in four lines, simple rhyme, but they're always heartfelt, and I tend to find that I can write easily to images and more than just think of some words out of my head. And that one just was the picture. I just thought of the words because it just jumped out. That's what it meant. And the other day, my daughter, who's only 25, and that none of those kids have seen war. They've only heard of the modern war and all that. But they all get up and go down to this service and to commemorate. And it's just a great patriotic thing to see. And I'll just do this other one. It's the same sort of feel, but it probably sums up the meaningless of war in the total concept. It's called Lest We Forget, which is a continuation of the Anzac theme. But lest we forget our fallen soldier fighting to be free. Lest we forget the loved one who can't hold you, lost on land or at sea. Lest we forget the meaningless of war. Lest we but stand not alone. When you sit back and count the score of lost loved ones far from home. Lest we not be proud of these fallen women and men, lest we not celebrate what war is about, but keep your thoughts and attitude open and leave yourself no doubt. We be still proud Australians and Kiwis of a time when young and patriotic, but let's now try and look to peace. War is so idiotic. I stand here as a proud true Aussie, but never wanting to see war again. Only thing I want to is we fight a Mozzie. I want no anger, no more pain. Lest we forget. We must never forgive the atrocities of war and regret. No one wins when no one can't live. Please don't take this verse the wrong way. I'm a lover, not a fighter for life. Don't want to see another hearse today or another innocent kid in strife. To change this attitude worldwide, I know is a bloody big ask. For everyone has homeland pride, but as one we must take on this task and rid the world of hate and war. I want memories that are good. Just remember what war's fighting for. Fuck, I wish I could, lest we forget. Sorry about the expletive, but it was just part of the emotion. But that happened, and that was like, that happens every year on the 25th of April. We celebrate this day. So, and as I said, it catastrophes through the world and the flooding that brought me to write other poems. And actually, in fact, I write in rhyming verse, but I actually wrote a few poems about the situation with the flooding. And I just appreciate.
Can you share those?
For a second. Yeah, certainly, and I'm just looking where I put that because, as I said, I've got that many written out here to go. So this flood happened about a week ago, and what it was, it was pretty devastating for us on a grander scale. We're pretty lucky on the eastern seaboard of Australia because the climate is quite tame in compared to a lot of other parts. When you go north, you get the cyclones that tend to devastate northern Queensland and the northern part of Australia. And we're just south enough in latitude that we don't tend to get the weather pattern of the cyclone, but more the waves that come down often. And some of the waves that are created from these are some of the best waves you'd ever see. And around a place called Snapper Rocks, which is north of on the border of New South Wales and Queensland, which you can imagine Australia have been divided into lots of states. If you go up the eastern seaboard of New South Wales, on the coastline, there's where the coast the border is divided between New South Wales and Queensland. There's a point wave that is so famous, and they have major world surfing championships on that point. And when the cyclones happen, and the weather pattern has this anti-clockwise effect, it creates an offshore breeze and brings in a lot of waves, and some of the best waves in the world are caught on film. This place, Snapper Rocks in Kira, and it's quite. As a surfer, it's amazing to see. So, but as I said, this incident, and we didn't see the sun for a few weeks. And I've written a poem. I've written it in prose. I don't normally write in prose, but it's just called "Then From the East," and it's just talking about the sun. And it goes like this: Then from the east appeared a golden ball of light, peeking over a line of heavy cloud on the horizon. We pray that Mother Nature has finished crying like we have. We pray that we see the last of this devastation. And as we mop up and count our losses, our heart goes out to those less fortunate than we are. Life can be cruel. The weather and Mother Nature can be crueler. I welcome this golden ball than ever before, to warm our hearts, to dry our land, and to bring back some hope of normality. We are but children of the sun. The sun is our saving grace and our biggest enemy. Today he is our friend and our saviour. Where would we be without the sun to dry our tears and our land? Life is surely a feast or a famine. The weather can totally dominate and consume our lives for good and bad. To all out there who have experienced loss and hardship more than they could ever imagine, our hearts go out once more. May the sun bring a glimmer of hope. May the sun be our guiding promise of better days ahead. I'm in dip. It's more just a statement of of how the situation was, and I don't normally write like that in prose, but it was just a feeling I had at the time. So that was it.
You just write the most powerful poems, and I love. I don't know where you this came from, because you had these years of working for an oil company, and then all of a sudden you write these masterful poems, and you're compiling them for publication and things like this. I am so proud of you. This is just absolutely fantastic.
You know what, Garrett? I've mentioned it once before. I hadn't picked up a pen in anger 4 years ago. It was only through Facebook that I was invited to look at surfing photos, and I started to comment in rhyme, as I've said before, and I just loved writing. I don't even read. I'm not a reader. I haven't got a concentration span to read books, but I just love to write this, and I've got a passion. I write these, and it's usually from images, and might be just an inspirational quote that someone's put up. And we share a friend through Facebook, Dr. Jeff Mullen from South Africa.
Oh my gosh! Isn't he wonderful?
Amazing inspirational quotes, and the amount of poems I've written from his shared images that are inspirational to me, and he gets right into the inspirational bit. I look at the picture and write literally. And if the listeners want to see what I do, I've got a site on Facebook, and I'll give it a plug now, because I'm trying to give this impression of the image, and it's hard without seeing it in front of me, without the listeners seeing the image in front to really appreciate. But if they go to my Facebook site, and it's Dip Tales, Poems from the Heart, you'll see virtually all my poems, and the image that actually enticed me or inspired me to write these words. And so that's where I get all my inspiration to write. And if it wasn't for Facebook, I probably wouldn't have had the inspiration or the impetus to do it. And I really thank all my friends that support. And I'm a bit probably a serial pest when it comes to writing, because I'm quite prolific. And I'm sure that they go, oh, here's another poem. But you know what? If I don't put it down in words straight away, the feeling passes, and I'll never get that feeling to write that way. So I always tend to put them on and share them straight away. And people, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I just love to write like this. And I, as I said, I can write in non-rhyming prose, but I just love to try the challenge of writing something that makes sense and have it in rhyming pattern. But getting back to the inspirational stuff, you know, a lot of people that have suffered depression and give up about life and that, I wrote this poem called Never Give Up. And it sort of epitomises this thing about the light at the end of the tunnel, and you know, there's always hope. And it goes like this: when that light at the end seems flickering and distant, when all hope seems to be gone, when life seems unfair and never consistent, and everything you do seems forlorn, this is the time you must stay strong. This is the time to hold on and think of the great times that's where you belong. That light will always be shone. Time is an enemy, but hope's always there. But time can heal a bad thought. You keep the hope in me, you always care. It's those hopes and those dreams that should be sought. Never give up on hope and a dream. See that light, the light that's getting brighter. Life isn't always strawberries and cream. Just remember, you've always been a fighter. Never give up on life. Never do. So that was just one of those ones that I've got a few friends, and I, you know, without getting too into it, I've suffered depression pretty heavily myself. So I tend to read between the lines with people that I can see from their words that they're suffering, and you know, I just I've had talks with people that that I've read between the lines, and I don't know if I mentioned I had a friend that. I just sort of said to her, she said something really silly, like, I want to end it or something, you know, just sort of a line. And I had a talk with her because I explained that I'd been through depression myself, and I said, look, I know where you're coming from, and I want to talk to you. And I spoke to her for an hour, and I didn't hear from her for about a year. And she came back online one day and she looked totally different. And she said to me, Mark, it's Dimity. I said, what? How are you going? She said, I get a bit welled up. She said, you saved my life about a year ago. You know, how that makes you feel. When so I've got this compassion for people, and I don't think I'll ever lose it. You know? It's just, I still get upset thinking about it.
You have a gift.
Made me feel so good about to say that, yeah.
Well, you have a gift, Mark. I'm not kidding you. So I'm grateful that you're sharing everything with the listeners tonight, and that you continue to write. And you do it so effortlessly. So, I mean, this is what I think I'm so impressed with you by, is the fact that, you know, if you told me to sit down and write a poem, I will tell you it would take me probably, you know, a week to come up with a, you know, four-line prose or something like that. And you, before I say write a four-line poem, you've already got seven versions of the, you know, of different things out. And I'm like, how did you do this? I didn't even say go.
You know, it's funny because I did this thing once on Facebook. It just like when we had bad weather and that, obviously I spent a lot of time writing, and probably my most creative is at night when everyone's gone to bed, and I call it the witching hour. Yeah. And I'm probably more creative when it's quiet, and I go through my Facebook and I see a lot of these images, and I just get an idea, and I just run with it. But I don't know what it is, because like I said, 4 years ago I hadn't picked up a pen, and I don't know what. I just love to write like this, and there's always an image or an inspiration, you know. And it's this week, pretty well to the day, it's been 6 years since I lost my dad. And
I'm sorry.
I think last time I did that, I did the poems about Dad, Another Angel, and the letter from Dad. And I wrote a poem called It's Been 6 Years. And the reason why I wrote it, because I've had a lot of friends, like we're all that age now where we're all, you know, we're starting to get older, and we're losing our parents, you know. Like I'm 60 years old, so, you know, most of my friends are in that era.
You're 68.
Or younger, but 60. No, not 60. Yeah.
I don't even believe.
I turned 60 the week I got made redundant at work. So, I've been 5 months out of work now. So, but you know what? I'm just loving this bit of retirement time, and I get a chance to do my passion of surfing and writing. I love both, doing both. And I think last time we talked about going over to the Mentawai surfing, you know, which I love doing. And we had that reunion with all my mates. Well, I'm doing that with my two sons this October and going back to the same place, which will be the seventh trip. And it's just an amazing part of the ocean to surf. And I'm just looking forward to the father and son bit. You know, and next year, I just... The problem with this place, it's such a beautiful place that most of it's return guests, and it gets booked out for the whole year. And that's 26 trips in 5 days. And if you don't hurry up and put your name down, you miss out. So
you don't get it. Yeah.
I booked spots for next year that I haven't even organised other players, so to speak. But I know that I'll fill them. But if I don't pencil that spot in, you miss out altogether. While I've still got my health and I've still got the passion to surf, I'll try and go. And where I like my surfing, my wife and my daughter love to shop, and they're about to go on a trip to Hawaii, shop to your drop tour. And it's so funny because, we have totally different interests, my wife has never curfewed me to do what I love doing, which is surfing, and I never curfew her with the shopping. And
I'm with you, Dip. There's no way I would ever want to go on a shopping trip at all. I mean, it's lucky to get me to the grocery store to buy just vegetables for the week, so I'd be much more inclined to hop on a surfboard.
When you go on, there's a lot of really good deals at the moment. If you go online with the airlines, you can pick up some. It's a bit cattle class sort of, the trip over. It's 10 hours to Hawaii, but the money they save on those flights, they got for spending on. I think my daughter's into Victoria's Secret, and I think she's got every pink outfit you can think of that you don't get in Australia. So it's so funny, and because my wife sees my daughter as when she was younger and treats her like a clothes horse, and she's always buying her these really amazing clothes, and she'll put them on and she looks like $1 million, and she goes, "You can't wear that out. That's too revealing." And I said, "Lee, you bought it for me. It's your fault."
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. You know, she does some, she wears some beautiful stuff. And I mean, I love my daughter to death, and I've written many poems about it, and probably been closer to my daughter than I ever have, you know, because when they're growing up, you tend to sort of, that 13 to 20, you know, you're going through that, you know, that time where they don't want to know you and you don't know anything. And now
right.
It's like, "Oh, Dad, you were sort of right there, you know." But she's great. And, you know, out of the three kids, she's the one that shouts me breakfast. And my boys is tight as, you know. But they always like, give you 10, I'm good for it. And give me, and you know what, it's your kids. If you can't do things for your kids, you can't do it for anyone. I'm a softie when it comes to that. And my wife's the same. She's the best mum you could ever get. Those kids don't know how lucky they are. Honestly, they've got the best mum going, and you know, it's great to see her. And you know, she's been the best wife ever. So I've had a...
You've got a great family.
Yeah, I pinch myself, you know, just how lucky I am, you know. And but getting back to that one, I was going to read you that one about Dad.
Oh, yeah.
And I know this is where I want to head. As I said to you last time, I've got a place down there called the Brass Monkey, which is it's actually like a restaurant come musician where they have great acts. A lot of the musicians get down there, and you have a meal and you listen to the music, and it's got a bit of a cult following in relation. But you get some great, and I've got to know the owner over the years because I love to go down and watch live music. And I've always wanted to do this thing where I get on stage and I actually recite my poems to them, having, you know, sitting down and just in a real casual atmosphere. And as I said, I'm starting to review my poems and revisiting them and putting choruses to them. Because with four-line rhyme, a lot of them convert to music quite easily. And as I said, we played those ones that Megan, my friend Megan, had written about the Will the Fly. And I was saying to Jad, the owner of this, that I'd love to be able to do this and just wrap around and say my poems with the image up on the wall behind me and showing what inspired me to write the poem. And I'm sure I can get enough tire kickers to come down and fill the place. So if any of my friends are out there listening, that's where I want to do one day. And Jad's quite happy for me to do it. I said, mate, I'll get bums on seats for you. If it means just, you know, get him to have a drink and a food, I'll do it for nothing. I'm not that, you know, this is just still fun to me. It's not a bread and butter. So until it becomes a chore and I need to do it as my livelihood, I'm not that, you know, fussed about, you know, going to the nursing homes and reciting, because I love that. I just love people's reaction. If I touch a heartstring or emotion, it's just fun. You know? It's just so. This poem, getting back to Dad, as I said, it's 6 years virtually this week that Dad's passed away, and it's called "Been 6 Years," and it goes like this. So, and I've written this sort of with a chorus, and I think I wrote it on the idea that anyone that's lost their dad can relate to what I'm saying. And it's been 6 years since I lost my dad, but who is really counting? Those wonderful memories still make me sad as I look at this photo I'm mounting on my wall, so I can see the man who really made me appreciate the things in life and the happiness he gave me. Been 6 years since I said goodbye as a tear rolls down my face. Been 6 years, but I still have a cry for a man I can never replace. The time has flown and the years roll by. They are still fond memories that last forever. I'll remember you till the day I die, when we'll be back together. When we'll be back together, Dad, when we'll be back together. Until that day, I will be glad. Those memories will last forever. Mm. That last line was sort of a chorus. And, you know, I just love that sort of stuff and the emotion. And as I said before, I've had a few people that have had eulogies to write and stuff like that, and they give me a few facts about their loved one or who had passed, and I just put together some words, and I just find when I'm doing heartfelt poems that they come easy to me, so, and they really appreciate it, and I get a buzz of their reaction. So yeah, that sort of stuff's always going to be in my repertoire, so to speak, you know.
So how often do you go down to the senior center or volunteer?
Look, this year I've just been really busy since leaving work. They've had a few changes, but last year I was getting down about once a month, and I've got a few other ones to go to. Like we've got, as you have in nursing homes, and we've got about five or six in the Shire that I've approached. The one I've been going to is a local one, and the buzz is, you get in there, and I go in there, and I actually project the image that inspired me to write up on one of those projector screens, and I've got my a little cursor bar, and I actually say the poem at the lectern over there, and I get the old folk to look at the picture, and I always have this joke. The beauty is I only take the one poem because, you know, they've all got dementia, and about, you know, I can say the same poem over and over, and they go, oh, that's a good one too. We like that. But they always get one of those ladies in there that says, you said that last time. I know that one. And they go, oh, God, I got someone that's got a good memory. So, but you know what? Their reaction, as I said, I did that one to last interview. I think it was the Got to Face the Ugly Truth. And that reaction, and I get dressed up as an old person with the cane and the Andy Cap hat on and the cardigan. And as I said, when I did it down at the Arts Theatre, I just looked in the mirror and I thought I was looking at my father, which was funny because I knew exactly how to say the words. Because that's what I miss about Dad, with some of his antics. Just, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree is such a good cliche, because, you know, as much as you don't see it yourself, if people see Dad, they know, sure, where I'm where my personality or my sense of humour, if it is there, it comes from, because my dad was just similar to me, I suppose. And just that when I looked in, I put that card, he used to wear a cardigan. He used to live in boxer shorts and a singlet. He never felt the cold, that's how I remember him. It's those sort of things that are easily reflected and set in poem, because you just as you're reading, you're thinking about that image of your dad, and it's great. But we'll get back to a few more. This one, it's just called The Message. And these, as I said, this is an inspirational day, and I don't know whether I had a... It was a picture I can't recall, but I've just liked the image. It was obviously an image, but it's just called The Message, and it says, I'm sending out a message. I hope it does get through. Just hope you're rude and take it in, for you know it's true. For you know it's true. Words are such a strong emotion. They can really reach one's heart, like the bluest, deepest ocean. It's this analogy that I impart to help me get my message through, to help me prove my love, just to show that I love you. I'm your hand and you're my glove. The message of love is always strong, as long as it is sincere. To you this message does belong. I think you know it's clear. So four verses, four line, but as I said, my poems are all very simplistic, but it's the layman's sort of stuff. I mean, you don't have to be Williams Wordsworth, or you have to have something. There's nothing metaphorical or analytic, well, cryptic about it. You can read the line and you say, yeah, I can relate to that. And that's what I love to write, the stuff that people can relate to easily. And that's why I write in this sort of style, you know. It's fun. And
Well, I think that's the key, though, is that you write something that is relatable. You don't have to, get out of thesaurus or dictionary and try to figure out what the heck is going on. You can just kind of figure it out directly from what you're writing.
Don't get me wrong, mate. I've got a site I go to called Fan Story, and it's a site for like-minded poets and writers. And I went on. You're allowed to put up two poems a night because you don't want to hog the channels in their eyes. And it's an American site. And basically, the most amazing wordsmiths I've ever seen are on this site, but they rate and they actually critique your work. And I've actually got a bit of a following, but I'm just in awe at some of the wordsmiths out there that can phrase words, and they've got their style, and I write like this, and as much as I love their work, they seem to enjoy the simplicity of my work. So, each to their own. I think that's what's the beauty of writing word, is the written word, is that everyone's got a different taste of what, and a different perception. Like, I'll read a poem and people will take from it something different to others. And
isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Yep. I want to send a big shout out right now to Donnie Revel, who is a new listener to the show tonight, who's now following us on the blog talk. So appreciate Donnie tuning in.
Donnie is a mate of mine that I just spoke to about half an hour before. And Donnie, the most amazing guy. And he has this love of animals like you would not believe. I know you love your animals too, and you've got your pet dogs, but Donnie will stop and talk to anybody that walks by. He is such an eccentric guy, and I love him to death. And he actually has... before tattoos and all that were in vogue, Donnie had the most amazing tattoos. And I thought, now, everywhere you look, everyone's got ink. And I don't even look twice at ink now, because it's sort of like a fad that's just dying. And I'm sure if I started up a tattoo removal clinic in a couple of years that can remove it with no pain, you become a millionaire overnight, because I'm sure there's a lot of ink out there that doesn't have a... I know they're sentimental, there's memories of your dad and mom and all that, but everywhere I look, the girls have got it down the side, all the way down there, and I'm sure some of the stuff that they get, they're going to go when they get older, Jesus, I can't...
why did I get that?
But imagine
kids
going, Grandma, what's that thing on you? It's all wrinkled now.
Right.
I don't know. Look, and you know what? I admire these tattooers, how great their work is. And as I said, I think I talked about last time, there's a tattoo show in America that they actually have this like these MasterChef shows where they get eliminated and they've got a tattoo on people. And some of these guys are just artists in their own right, are just some incredible. And you see some, you go, oh, God, I hope you didn't pay for that. Yeah. So each to their own. But getting back to the dogs and that look, there's a few photos that come up on Facebook that a few photographers, as you know, I get inspired by a lot of sea photographers. And there's a fellow in America that named Morgan Mason, and Morgan's only a young guy, 27. And, you know, it's all about composition and just composing the photo. I mean, everyone has access to great cameras these days. They have access to the most amazing digital, and it's point and shoot, delete what you don't want. But if you don't get that composed shot, you never really get the best shot. And Morgan did this photo where of a dog on the water's edge. It's a sunset, and his master is out surfing, and he's sitting on the foreshore looking out to sea, just waiting for him. And you see this a lot. A dog will sit at your towel and we'll wait for hours, and he'll know he's out there surfing, and he won't leave your towel and just be possessed there. And this dog's, as a picture, I'm just painting the picture because you'll see this on my Facebook site that inspired me, is a picture of a dog on the shore and looking out at his master. And I wrote this poem on this image, and it's called A Silhouette of My Best Friend. And I think anyone that owns a dog will relate to this. It goes like this. A silhouette of my best friend under fading light waits faithfully till the end. We'll wait until the night. He knows I'm out there in the ocean catching that very last wave, but that's the love of a canine devotion. He knows exactly what I crave. Looking, staring, watching out, he knows I'm out there somewhere. This love we're sharing leaves me no doubt. He's the one who will always care. A silhouette of my best friend, my lighthouse, my soulmate, my boy. Only a dog lover can understand this contentment I enjoy. Forever faithful, forever there, no matter what the weather. I'm not the only one who is aware this bond will be forever. And I've written a lot of poems about dogs and with their masters. And, you know, look, as I said, my daughter has a dog that's 10 years old now. It's a little Shih Tzu Maltese. And when we first got this dog, it must have chewed every blind. It chewed on every chair in the house, and I could not stand this bloody dog. I wanted to throttle it. Well, now I can't be without it. I cannot be without this dog. I love it to death. He's just got such a person. If I rattle the keys, he knows we're going for a drive. I've got to say the word walk. I've got to spell the word walk. I can't say walk or drive because he knows that means.
He knows.
If the phone rings of a night and I've got to go pick my daughter up, she's been out of a night, he knows that's a drive out in the car to pick her up at late, you know. And he's up. He could be sound asleep and he hears the phone ring. He's up. He knows he's going for a drive in the car. I put the window down and he puts his head out and he's got the breeze blowing his fur. Look, you know what? They've got such a personality, and I'm sure anyone that's got an animal can relate to what I'm saying. It's just an amazing thing to see, you know. And you've got your dogs, I know, and you love them to death. And I know a lot of my friends out there, when I write these poems about the animals, they can really relate, and they always get a good hit on likes that like them, you know. And it makes you feel good that you've written something that everyone likes, and so it's good that, in that respect. Yeah.
Where are we going next?
This is Raw Radio. I got a phone call come in. I'll ignore it. But okay. Basically, someone's setting me up here because I said that I'm going to be on radio. So I'll just ignore this and we'll continue on. So we'll continue on with that vein. Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's just have a look here, what I've got. Because so I've got this poem called Takes a Proud Man, and I've just got to find the other page through it. Ah, here we go. Takes a Proud Man, right? And it's just a poem about, I don't know what I'd call this one, but you'll get the gist of it, right? It goes like this. Takes a proud man to admit defeat. Takes a strong man to admit he's wrong. The feeling of winning is always sweet, but that feeling doesn't always belong. Takes a true lover to feel true love. True love is back in fashion. To love one another and never get enough. to crave for that closeness and passion. Takes a lot of love and a lot more respect to appreciate the woman in your arms. But when you look up above, you have no regret, for true love always calms when it charms. Takes a good person to consider the other, to help and to show them the way. Never underestimate the power of your lover. Listen to the words that they say. For words can satisfy, words can please. Never underestimate their power. They can soothe and they can appease. Take you in and always empower. Takes a lonely woman to miss a man who satisfies her every desire. She tries to hold on as long as she can. When there's no other man, he she can acquire. Probably could have been a few more verses to that, but it was getting pretty long, so I think I just finished it the time I wrote it. But I don't know what inspired me there, but that's the sort of stuff. And, you know, as I said, yeah, I haven't got a romantic bone in my body, but I can write that stuff. You talk to my wife, she'll attest
to that.
Isn't that
funny?
What
do you do to spoil your wife?
Good question. Let her go to Hawaii.
Let her go to Hawaii. Okay, yeah.
No. Look, as I said, we've got our own interests and passions, we've been together from 21, and she was 19, and I'm 60 now. So we've been together 40 years, and yeah, we've had our ups and downs. And we like all relationships, you know, we've had our ups and downs and problems, and but we're still together, and we've got a great family too. And you know what? I always make this joke, but I've still got my eldest two at home. My eldest boy got married in about October, and he's moved on with his wife. And my middle son and my daughter are still at home. And I said to my wife the other day, you know what, Lee? You know, I'm really not that fussed about the kids moving out. I said, you know, because if they move out, we're going to have to start talking to each other. What are we going to talk about? It's just a bit of a fun joke, but it's funny because when you're in the house when you've got that people around you, and a lot of people they when they go when their kids move out and they become empty nesters as the expression goes.
Sure.
You do see that happen, that they just haven't got any interest. Like I know people that retire and they say, oh, I want to go back. I'm bored. Do you know what, Garrett? I'll never be bored, mate. I've got so much going on in my life now, and this, you know, one door shuts and another door opens, and you know, I miss the camaraderie of the refinery and the guys, and but you know, it's another part of my life, this, and you know, I'm just loving it, and even just my metabolism from not doing shift work now, I've noticed the difference in myself. It's so much more healthier for myself, and I still have late nights where I get stay up till 1 or 2, but in the morning I wake up at 6 as bright as a button, and you know, my time's my own, and I'm just loving this. You know, it's only been 4 months, 5 months, but you know, I just still feel like I'm on holidays from work. But I'm sure in about 6 months' time, I'm going to say, well, why aren't I going back on shift? And it'll wind down, and I've got, like I say, this idea of doing my poems live and with an audience of dipping friends, I'm going to call it. I love the idea of doing that, and you know, it's going to happen. I'll make sure it happens, and to do more where I have someone on stage that actually plays guitar and plays my songs, my poems to music would be a buzz. And
well, you have
your
friend that's done that, the couple of the songs.
Yeah, Megan. She did those for me.
What a fantastic job.
Yeah, well, I went to the Monkey the other night, and there's a guy named Steve Balby, and he was in a couple of bands from the 70s and 80s, Electric Hippies, and we had a great band going around called My Sex, and they had a song called In Computer Games, People. Well, they've, like a lot of bands, they've reformed, and they've never really stopped, but their lead singer died tragically a few years ago, and they replaced him with Steve, and he was amazing, such an entertainer, and he brought a different feel to the songs, but it's all their songs. But then I heard that he was playing his own stuff down at the Monkey, and he, as we call it, the Brass Monkey, and I went down there the other night, and I watched him on stage, and I was blown away by a different sound to his and he got, he's doing an album at the moment, and it's called Humans in New York, and it's based on a photographer that you might have heard this blog site. It's called Humans in New York, and it goes around taking pictures of homeless people, eccentric people in New York, and Steve got onto this, and he's actually written songs based on these pictures of this photographer taken in New York. And he played two of the songs down at the Monkey, and honestly, I just loved the concept. So I just couldn't wait to meet him after the show, and I said, Steve, I can't believe you're doing this, because I've been doing this, writing to images for 4 years, and I love what you're doing, and this is what I want to go with, you know. And I actually wrote a poem about Steve's son. It was called The Path of Life, and it was a picture of Steve had put a picture of his young son on a bush track, and he had a little, like a stave or a stick, and he was about to take off, and Steve's behind and taking a photo. And, you know, I didn't copy it at the moment, but I will say it another time. But it's that sort of stuff that was a father-son bit. But getting back to Steve, this concept of what he's doing, it was just so coincidental that that's what I wanted to do. And I don't play a musical instrument, and I just love watching musicians play. And I'm loving my live music, and I think I said last time I go to a band every Sunday and watch a fellow that's just amazing guitar work. And I'd love to be able to play it, and even if it's a couple of chords, but even if I just word the poem and while someone strums the music, that's where I want to head with my stuff. And you know, I'll just continue to write. As I said, I'm up to about 3,000 poems, and I'm even thinking about going to get in contact with publishing companies, because I think I've mentioned before there's a lot of great musicians out there that they can't write lyrics, and they buy lyrics. And
right,
I've had people say, well, why don't you approach them with your song? Because as I said, I'm revisiting my poems and looking at what would work as songs, and I know you got to, you know, jiggle them a bit and tweak them and take out a few ends and buts and get, because there's, and this is where if I had a musical background and I can envisage what works with the beat and the rhythm, I can't do that. But you know, guys like Bernie Taupin and Elton John, well, Elton wrote the music to Bernie's lyrics, so he'd go and give Elton these lyrics, and Bernie would write these lyrics, as you know, and give them to Elton, and Elton would just make music from them. So you don't have to have that music. I don't know whether Bernie even played music, but basically, you know, there's some amazing songs. You know, forget the man and what he is. If you didn't like him, it's like Michael Jackson. They're just amazing entertainers. And since I've started to write, I've gone and revisited all these old songs of these artists like Elton John, Billy Joel, just how they write their lyrics and some of the thought in their words. And you know what? It doesn't have to be rocket science, the words. Bob Dylan, you know, you're telling a story. We got a musician here, Paul Kelly, and he's a folky sort of musician that writes stories in his words, and basically they're poems and to music. But there's an art to it, and I know that, and I've got to just simple them down, because a lot of the best songs in the world, they're very simple lyrics, and they just repeat, but it's the riff and the hook and the music that goes with it. So it's like peaches and cream. Without the peaches, you know, without the cream, they're just not working. So I know that some will work, but I've had Megan said to me, look, you can write music to any of that stuff you're writing. It's just a matter of how you decipher, or how you pronounce the words, and how you elongate or pause the word. It all works. And you know, sometimes you read song lyrics and you go, God, that doesn't work. And then when you hear them sing it, they pronounce the word with their diction's different, and
right,
it does work. It does work. And what you don't have to write in this perfect rhyme. You can do this proximate rhyme. And when I looked at the you get an old album sleeve and you look at the lyrics and you go, geez, did that say that? You know, how many often do you get this conception or perception of what the words are, and then when you go to the lyrics on a page on YouTube and you go, bloody hell, is that what that said? I had no idea, you know.
That's right, yeah.
yes, you hear a different perception in song because they pronounce it so different, and it works. So I'm not that fussed about that. My words are, I don't have to be so precise with rhyming to write songs, and this is my next facet of what I'm going to do. I'm going to head this way now. I'm going to get more involved with writing lyrics. I really love the idea of putting it to music, and I know there's enough people out there that would jump on board. I've got a few friends that I've talked about that are guitarists and musicians in their own right. They're just very busy with their own work, but they've said, look, I'd love to do it one day, and I'd love to be able to get someone that's an accomplished musician. Meg was great, but to have a full band behind, like Meg's song with the Will to Fly, I reckon with a full band it would just sound great, and she did a great job just on garage band, just on a rap in a house, in a bedroom. So I was talking to Pete the other day in town, and I said to him, look, I'd love you to do this. And he said, yeah, mate, I'll give it a go, but I've got 1,000 things happening. So if it happens, it happens. I'd love to walk in one day to this place I go to, and he's come up and starts playing this, because it's got a great Meg's put a great sound to it, and I'd love to have it on with drums, like live, and it would be great. And that's, as I say, that's where I want to head, next time. So, I know we're getting close to the hour, aren't we, mate? Well, how long have we got?
We got about 4.5 minutes left, so we're still doing okay.
Okay.
By the way, do you want to take a question? I think Donnie wants to ask a question. Yeah. Okay.
Is that Donnie?
Yeah.
It is Donnie. Donnie, you're live with Dip.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you, buddy. How are you?
Good, Dip. Now, you're talking about my tattoos. Now, my favorite tattoos of my grandfather, Poppy, that served 22 years in the Navy, it's art, but it's really... Anyway, it's really good listening to you over there in Huntington Beach, eh?
Yeah.
Well... I'm only 500 metres from your place, Donnie, but to get it in America like this on Skype, it's fantastic. Look, mate, as I said, I admire all those tattoos, and the point I was making there, I think, was just that there's tattoos that have a meaning, and there's tattoos that people just get because it's trendy, but I know your tattoos mean something, and I respect that, and I've always... said to you that you were a pioneer in that, and I've got a lot of friends that probably had tattoos before they were even trendy, and it's just that now you see that many of them that you become sort of blasé to them and their meaning. But I know yours mean a lot, and it's great that you made the effort to. This is the first time in 3 interviews that someone's called in, and I know it's an Aussie that's done it, and it's good to talk to you. So good on you for doing that, mate.
I want to ask Garrett, are you a surfer, Garrett?
I would love to surf, Donnie. I'll tell you, I live 4 blocks from the beach. I have zero excuse except that I had it in my head that when I moved here that I was too old and too broken down to try to even do something like that. And I'll tell you, I see old guys out there all the time in their 70s, late 60s, who are out there surfing all the time, and it puts me to shame. So, Donnie, I'm going to tell you, I would love to, but I have not taken it up yet. Any words of wisdom or advice for me?
You be careful.
You look like a surfer, but I practice yoga, Bikram yoga. You're never too old, never too late.
Never too old, never too late. There we go.
I listen, Garrett. Donnie would be a great guest. He has got so much history and information. You would really get a buzz out of Donnie as a guest, honestly, in his own right. Just the stories he tells me down the beach is so funny. And I'd love you to have him as a guest. He's a character. And I think that's what gravitates us, is the characters you get on the beach. And the drawing thing is the passion to surf. And I think whether you're old, like, it's funny when you said about, you're too old. Like, here's Donnie and I. Well, Donnie's the same age as me. We're both in our 60s. And basically, we never have lost the passion. And I watch a lot of guys in 70s. Sure, they've gone to Mal's, but they're out there enjoying it. And I think that's what it's all about, is that we all gravitate towards the ocean because it's such an attraction. But it keeps you thinking young, and I just love it. And Donnie does too. And, like, Donnie's a character of Cronulla that you can't be without. You need Donnie's in the world, and you need, I wish I could say that you need Dippy's in the world, but I'm sure people must get sick of me sometimes. But you know what? Yeah. At the end of the day, it's all fun. And as long as you it's harmless and you're not hurting anyone, it doesn't matter. You know, it's all
there you
good
go.
Fun.
There you go. Hey, Dip, I'm going to cut you off, Donnie. I'm going to say I'd love to chat with you again. So if you want to come on the show sometime, let me know, and we'll get it worked out.
Thank you, Dip. I'm going to say
I will talk to you on Facebook, but I got to sell the rest of the week. So I'm going to say thank you for tonight. And for everybody else who's listening, tomorrow night we're going to have a special early show at 4 p.m. Pacific time with John Cooperman, comic. He is going to be coming on, and he's bringing a special guest with him. Wednesday, we've got Stephen Michael Shear coming on to talk about his book about Patricia Neal, the Hollywood actress from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Thursday, we've got transgendered trucker Patty Spangler. She's going to come on to the show to give her our feedback on the Bruce Jenner interview from ABC. And then Friday, we've got Angelina Alexon, new guest to the Friday Night Dance Party in Hour 1. We're going to be playing her new music and sharing all of her stuff. If you like the show and are listening on Blog Talk, make sure to follow the show just like Donnie did. And then we'll see you live on Tuesday. Everybody, don't drive distracted. Thanks for being here. Love you on West Star Radio. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.